It's Friday, July 7th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Edmond, Oklahoma. Good evening, and welcome to the first of several podcasts, which I anticipate publishing this weekend. I had the opportunity on Thursday and Friday of this week to attend the 2006 Leadership Conference sponsored by the Oklahoma Department of Education. And this first podcast, entitled Learn and Serve America, was presented by Charles Moore, who is with Professional Services for the State Department of Education in Oklahoma. Also, Andrea Holier, who is additionally with Professional Services for the department, and Ray McSweeney, who is with the YMCA of Greater Tulsa. I've heard a lot about service learning in the context of higher education and one of the things that faculty need to be doing, but I hadn't really understood the difference between community service and service learning in the context of really K-12 education. And although this is not specific to technology, this is definitely specific to education and the types of things that we need to be doing in education at all levels, connecting the abstract at times and more theoretical ideas of the classroom with the practical real world, with real world problems that are in our communities and with the issues which are facing people outside the boundaries of the schoolhouse. And so I hope you enjoy this presentation, and I will include in the podcast show notes a variety of different links so that if you are interested in getting involved in a Learn and Serve America project in your local area, you should be able to get information about that and get in touch with those who can help you start a project like this in your school.
Good morning. Glad to have you all here. I'm Charles Moore from the Department of Education, administrator for the Learn and Serve America program. Andrea Holier is the coordinator for the program. Ray McSweeney is from Tulsa, the YMCA in Tulsa. And Marilyn Woodruff is the administrative assistant. We're about service learning, and I don't know how much you know about service learning. Service, obviously, is something that is familiar to all of us. Think back for just a minute about your first recollection of yourself doing service to your community. Could be church-related, could be school-related, it could be Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, YMCA. I grew up in western Oklahoma in a very small rural community, and community service was really a way of life for all of us who lived there. Everybody kind of had their thing that they did. And, good memories. Anybody want to share a memory that you might have of yourself doing service, Wesley?
Well, I was a Boy Scout, so I had to get service hours, you know, for different ranks. And I remember, you know, working on trails, building different things for retirement communities or all different kinds of, usually manual labor, it seems like. I remember hot days and getting shiggers, and I was in Manhattan, Kansas, so the memory of that, you know, persisted sometimes long ago.
What did you learn from that?
Well, it's all about giving back to the community, and it's about, you know, getting an ethic of service, I think. I mean, that's something that I think we want young people to develop, is this idea that, you know, it's not just something that you do once, but you want that to become part of the lifestyle, part of the world, in terms of being in service. There's a lot of different ways to serve.
And sometimes you do that instead of getting paid. You know, you get paid in a different way.
Yeah.
So, kids today think, well, I'm not even going to take off track when I get paid.
Yeah.
Real, my house is you live here.
You're part of
it. You're part of that. So. I can remember candy striping at the hospitals, knowing very well quick that I wasn't going to be in medical school. But it didn't bother me to go in and help or visit or do that. That's probably what was wrong.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Just a 4-H, you know, I grew up in the water, and
project for us. You know, we pick up trash and have the, you know, every Saturday or something.
Anyone have examples? I don't know if you're in contact. Are most of you practitioners, and do you have contact with kids? I would make an assumption, right? So, are any of you involving young people? You're the ones that you're in charge of in service to the community.
I'm sorry. I'm a local juvenile service. Organizing community service for somebody to sit there, something like from days, not off the bat.
Well, we had to start this learning program over the park before.
Yeah.
Years and I got tied up, I couldn't take care of it, but I'm interested in getting in it again. But what our kids did, they went down to senior citizens several times during the year, presented little parties at Christmas, things like that. Then they also went down and they would be reading partners with our elementary kids. The kids in my program would, I teach high school technology.
Right.
And they would do that, and then instead of having just teachers, they'd sit and doing nothing. We gave our kids, they had a criteria that they had to follow for the teacher. The teacher actually graded them on it, and it was all like, you know, did they do special things, and then they got a service learning credit card, which looked very good on their transcript.
Yeah.
And I hope that now that I'm down in the history, I was teaching it a long time.
Right.
They take care of technology and things like this to get it right. Because it did, it looked really good on high school transcripts. Mm-hmm. That they had an actual credit.
Senate Bill 680 was passed 15 years ago, I guess. A group of kids from Bartlesville, Fox City, kind of lobbied the legislature for elective credit for service learning. So if you want, you can do an elective credit class, a service learning class, but also an individual student can earn elective credit for service learning. So that might be something you would look into.
We had two or three seniors that really enjoyed smaller children, and they would go down, and that was part of their day. They would go down and be reading partners with kids that really had problems.
Yeah.
And the teachers would comment back that that child learned so much more from their high school students
yeah.
even with them.
Did you find that it took an accelerated student to do that? Often the what we hear yeah. is that often the kid that's had trouble reading often makes a really good tutor because they understand the problem.
They understand that child and they're not in a rush. And
come in.
Sometimes we found that even your special ed kids had more compassion and had more empathy with that little kid that couldn't read than the brighter students that would just hold up hurry and look at
them. Yeah.
Because it was something. It made them feel special.
Everyone, why don't you talk a bit about the bridge between community service and service learning.
Okay. A lot of us do. Do any of you do like canned food drive, like at Christmas or something like
yeah.
that? It's a great community service project. Service to make that into service learning, we can add a learning component to that. Have the students study hunger or study the nutrition of the canned food that is brought, or determine you know what kinds of things that they could bring to make a nutritious dinner for someone you know, to have. So you add that learning component, that's very important, that you have as much learning component as you do the service component, so that they're equally balanced. And that makes the difference between just community service and service learning.
Yeah. Ray, do you want to add?
Other than, I know that the, you know, RPG and passive learning, the new programming that you are utilizing, and different efforts, different schools have been, and community organizations who have been engaged in service learning, they start starting to put that together. For instance, I'll just show you this, and we can pass that around. INOLA, public schools, awarded a 2-year service learning grant, and it's a process. You start off small, and it continues to grow, and this particular system. A high school teacher and an elementary teacher partnered up and began being trained in service learning and quality service learning in that they have a lot of service for a small community. They wanted to really link those back to when the kids were learning in their classroom, so whether it be high school or elementary. And one thing led to another. They ended up having an elective service learning class because they saw that those high school students became so engaged, not only in pride in the school, engaged in what they were learning and why they were learning it, but also in a community. And again, it is a small community, and there's people who want to be involved in schools and aspects. So in the 2-year period they were involved in learning through Oklahoma, the students have been able to really bring that connection between city leaders and civic organizations and churches and partner with that school. And a little school like that really wants that. They want that positive life. These kids are really taking on their education and learning beyond that textbook in the classroom. They're actually going and practicing that and speaking before city leaders to advocate for something and learning what that process is and who those city officials are. They have a health component, emphasis on health and safety. And so they studied throughout their service learning project, they chose projects that had to do with that. That's a wide gamut from not only the nutrition aspect, but also what makes a healthy city, trails, access to trails, maybe research grants and things that people have out there to bring that community and school together. So again, it was a process. The one little project in the elementary school, we partnered, like I said, high schools and elementary. They got to do presentations about nutrition and their activity and maybe their pieces of legislation, their path in Oklahoma, looking at healthy lifestyle, healthy health, better health for our children, and then how we do it. So they were studying that, about Oklahoma nutrition. So anyway, one thing led to another, and they had a class. They actually started pairing up or linking their service projects to their path objectives and creating a book out of that. So they wrote to the principal or the superintendent and say, we really like this methodology of learning by doing, with these service projects and linking it to our math skills or linking it to our science skills, and talking about nutrition, et cetera. We really love it learning to be. It kept them engaged in school. And of course, leadership skills, public speaking skills, all of those things are tied into it too. And they're deliberate. You know, what is something, some of the activities that take place, of course, are options, they're not planned. But the other is important to really deliberately plan for what you're doing and linking to. Okay, I'm going to teach math. Here are the things I need to teach in this semester. There's those traditional ways of teaching that are great, and half the time that doesn't happen in the school. But then you can also take those and do something with it. For instance, they created a garden in their at their school. But not just a garden. They started bringing in science teachers. They started bringing in the art teacher. They started bringing, so then they started that web of pulling in all the subject level to create this one project. And it moved on and on and on. I won't go into all the details about that. But they knew it was important to identify, not just going out in service and leadership skills to create, post-teaching skills to create, but also linking it. We hope that that doesn't happen on these skills this year. So not only are we going to do it in the classroom, we're going to take what we think we learned and are struggling to learn and see if we can apply it and see if it really can. So that was just a wonderful evolution of 2 years seeing that happen. And then with the mentorship, taking the, you can see some of the leaders, there were some that were struggling in math and reading in English, but going to the elementary school and beginning to work with those children. Now those children, because 10 days, they love being teenagers one day. But then the end of it, I thought, I really know how to do this. I thought it's something else I could. There's that dynamic that goes on. And now that school system, in that story, has that wonderful echelon of leadership buy-in with the school superintendent, real civic leadership within that community, seeing that those kids are engaged in trying to identify problems or issues in their community and trying to do something about it. And they're also trying to engage in their other small partnerships, communities, smaller rural communities around them, to show them that this is a really great methodology. And now they're linked to a public school that I work with in elementary school. So now they're partnering with the mentorship because the kids do have a choice whether to go to vocab or some other outside. They're now going into a demonstration school and helping their program projects who already practice the hands-on methodology of learning and experiential methodology of learning. So that just again brings more rural kids, you know, in high school out to Tulsa, seeing some other things that are going on and meeting some other things. So it's been a really delight. But the key was really making sure, as far as the administration and that part of it, linking it up and making sure they were being taught. heavy meetings, no. And then also talking to the other teachers and getting that slow buy-in. How does that work? Students are actually going into the other classrooms now. Instead of being a teacher's aide, they are teaching the teacher how to engage a pedagogy, a methodology of service learning in their class. So that's the evolution. Very small, start out with a few projects, address them on their term, few training, not really getting it, slow, and then it builds from there.
And the kids have documented.
Yes, they have.
What is one of the interesting stories we like to tell? A friend of ours, Catherine Berger Kay, an author, talks about, we spoke briefly a while ago about a canned food drive, and she talks about the canned food drive where we collected all this food, and if you've had experience with canned food drive, you know that some of the food that's brought is food that the kid doesn't want or the family doesn't want that they bring out of their pantry. So she had these high school kids that were loading up the food to take to the food bank, and one of the high school kids said, "This stuff sucks." And she said, "What do you mean?" Said, "Well, look at this stuff. This is bad food." He said, "I have an idea. Why don't we take this food back into the school and let's have a dinner and invite the teachers to come to the dinner?" So they went in and prepared the food from the food drive for the people to eat. It brought a new realization. We ought to be giving more thought to nutrition, to good stuff that we could be sending. So I think there are lots of learnings that can come out of this. Let's look for just a minute about what people that are involved in service learning are saying about it.
We see service learning turn around the lives of kids. It transforms them in terms of academic achievement. It gives them an opportunity to apply what they're learning in the classroom in real life situations.
Kids love it. I wish I could involve all high school kids in it.
They are actually getting outside of the walls and seeing what they're learning in school, how it applies to the outside world, and that they can make a difference in their community.
I feel that the students in today's society need to be involved in service learning. It helps them become better prepared citizens, and it teaches not only responsibility, but it gives kids an opportunity to feel needed and to contribute to their to the community around them.
The kids love it. They love this program. They love working with the students.
It's an investment in the future. We share what we know, and we share what we've learned, and we learn as we share.
We learn better by doing things, and I think that service learning just captures that. That's the essence.
Oh, it's wonderful. They love to be involved. And they actually learn better when they have hands-on contact with it.
And once you've had service learning, you will not be able to do without it. We started with one project, now we have two, and my mind is always thinking about a third project.
Service learning really empowers the kids if they see a need in the community. Now, instead of expecting somebody else to take care of that need, they'll use their skills that they learned in the classroom.
I'd say if you're not thinking about it, you're missing out. I think that this is the way to go. I think that it doesn't have to be that much more. It just brings more value to what you're doing.
Well, I think that it makes them feel part of the community, and it makes them feel like they're having a purpose, and they're helping out the community, and they kind of feel more goal-oriented.
Do it. Just do it. I promise that you will walk away with a great feeling.
I can't even imagine being involved in education without being involved in service learning.
They're learning stuff that they're going to use for the rest of their lives, skills that are applicable to the real world.
The funding for this project actually comes from the Corporation for National and Community Service. It's a corporation in Washington, D.C. You probably know about AmeriCorps, maybe AmeriCorps Vista, maybe Senior Corps, RSVP programs, foster grandparent programs. This is all part of the Corporation for National Service. We have a grant that comes to the Department of Education. It's a formula-based grant depending on the size of the state. So every state gets this money. We then put that money out into competitive grants. They're very small grants, $3,500. What we find is that in most cases, unless you're needing to hire staff, at the end of the year, most of our subgrants have money that they have not used, because it doesn't cost a lot of money. It really is all about making changes up here. And what our subgrantees tell us is that so much of what they do is donated. Community partners donate to this kind of thing. We did an extensive project in Lexington, Oklahoma, which was an environmental project. And they wrote a grant to plant, I don't know, 6 trees. They ended up planting 60 trees because we put them in touch with the Tree Bank Foundation, who brought not only all of their talents, but also lots of trees for their park. What they did then was partner with senior citizens in the community who had practice of trees that are indigenous to Oklahoma. I don't know if you know Lexington, but it's a very rural community, very lots of elderly folks there. School bonds had not passed for years because older folks did not see the they saw kids as problems rather than solutions. After this project, the school bond passed excitedly, and senior citizens began to see kids in a different light. So I think that's an advantage, that one of the many that come out of this kind of thing. We have grants, and I'll give you a sheet here that if you're interested in securing a grant, you could contact us and we'll send you an application. They ought to be ready within a month. What does it say?
Oh, so we can get funded, so we can start on the
Yeah, yeah. This brochure tells you a little more about it. Actually, you could be thinking in terms of 4 different areas. Education, which we've talked quite a bit about here, could be a mentoring, tutoring program. Environment, which we just have talked a little bit about. We're really more interested, we're not particularly interested in planting another tree. We've planted lots of trees. But what is it in a science class that kids could take to the community? Maybe it's water testing. Maybe it's, any other examples that you all think of in terms of...
Yeah, and I think one of the key components of federal funding is allowing the youth, and it has to happen in different levels, it happens differently, of course, when you're working at a high school level versus, first and second grader, but it's actually allowing them to do the identification of what some of those issues are. Sometimes you have to bring those issues to them or talk about those issues. It's allowing them to go out and what is the real community need out of it? What do we see going on? Get a paper out, talk to adults, talk to other kids. Kids know a lot, that's what I love about it. It really gets engaging them in what's out there. What do you feel like you see as an issue that you want to change or talk about or help or benefit?
And then what are we learning that we bring to that situation?
Exactly.
Okay, so you've got education, environment, health and public safety, which is really a focus of our program. And just at a state level, we see a lot of research telling us that obesity is a real problem. So we really are, our grant is trying to focus on at least one component in the area of health and public safety. And that might be health fairs that the kids put together in their community. Any other examples that you all think of in terms of health?
Well, I have a question. Now, BPA grads, student organization, we wanted to focus on SAD this year. It used to be through the kids drunk driving, now
right.
Again, something decisions.
Right.
Would that fit into the Learning Center also?
Sure.
As far as under health and public safety?
Sure, sure.
That's a pretty broad area.
Yeah. We have a down in our little town, we don't even have any business, but that's our problem. You know, we've got toothpaste and a telephone, that's it. But we have a high drug problem, and we have a high teenage pregnancy problem.
Yeah.
And that's what my VPA group is going to take on this year, and if we can get this again, we get this program again, that would,
yeah,
that would all work together to make a, an awesome
program. Oh, sure, sure.
And the counselor who wants to work with it too, so.
And especially the resources that Learning Center offers, too, can bring in people that may not be right there in the community, but can connect to each other.
Okay.
Or do a similar thing.
Yeah, and then the fourth area is human needs. So almost any need that the youth in your community would identify as something they wanted to address would fit into one of those four categories. A kind of a major project with the campfire this year has been an Empty Bowls project. They involve art students and generally the student body in making clay bowls. They studied poverty in the community, which we just did a workshop in what the instructional, what is her, Katie's title again?
Oh, she's
curriculum director. And she just said that most of the kids that she's in touch with did not realize that there was even an issue with poverty in their community. The more they got into it, realized that poverty was an issue. So they made these bowls. They partnered with Panera Bread or some soup. They ended up having a soup dinner and invited people to come. They made a presentation about poverty. They served soup, and the people took the bowl home with. The money that they made from the dinner then went to the food bank for poverty issues. So those four areas, and Ray mentioned the youth involvement. Why don't you talk just a little bit about how that happens?
Yeah, I think that we can, again, direct this to another level to actually bring their voice to the situation. The more they are allowed to involved in the components of service learning, so the identification of need, taking action, and then there's an evaluation, celebration, and demonstration showing what you actually did. Training them and having them learn about that methodology, but also allowing their voice to help solve that problem. And sometimes that's a huge of control of everything, but letting them make getting them involved, that's the whole point of service learning too. And then there's that key piece of connecting back. What are you actually in English? It would be, it really was a writing skill, or a coaching skill. And now, maybe something you use this, this math objective school to measure the issue, the elementary adding in subtracting, whatever it is. We've had subgrantees that are in the arts, so they did a mirroring project. It's just not painting something on the wall. A more deliberate methodology by way of course that we need in the CAP objective, but what are we doing? We study health and we paint something on the wall in the cafeteria that shows healthy lifestyle. You know, the kids actually study about this nutrition and why it's important to eat and exercise right now. It's a huge issue right now, child obesity and diabetes and all of that. But just the little mind starting to think about that right now, and then the influence on those parents, I mean, it's just little tiny steps, and then being active. They were able to engage in actually, identifying what's wrong in the mural and why the mural, what does that mean, and how is that a communication piece, et cetera. And then they've gone out and done all kinds of things in the community with their arts. And, again, why are we doing this? It's giving them a chance to see.
We'd like to formalize that process in each of our subgrants by having a youth action council. So in the application, you need to speak to us about a group of kids that you might bring together to form a youth action council. Andrew, you want to talk a little bit about that?
The Youth Action Council, we see as being the core student leaders for implementing your service learning to begin with. They may be the ones that identify the problem and determine what it is that they want to work on at that particular time, and then to get the rest of the students, as many as possible, involved. And we think of that as being maybe a group of 20 or less. Normally, now some people have made, because all the kids get so excited, they all want to be in the YAC, and so maybe a whole classroom becomes a Youth Action Council.
They started out actually with their National Honor Society.
In our case, it'd be more like my BPA group.
Right.
That would give them.
Yeah. One of the really neat things about service learning, though, is that it doesn't just have to be identified leaders. You don't just have to use the student council. What we find is that kids that aren't involved in anything else often will gravitate towards service learning. So don't exclude those kind of kids when you're...
What about alternative ed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Jamie, do you have anything to add? Jamie is our evaluator for the programs with the Oklahoma Technical Assistance Center of Education. In your observations of what's going on, anything you want to say?
Sounds like you guys are doing a pretty good job, Kevin. That's about what I've seen. I've seen, like you said, a lot of the trees, a lot of stuff with gardening. The empty bowls thing was really neat. I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed getting to participate in the student trainings you guys have for the student activities to go and go to Camp Rainier there, the things with the rep sports and the leadership thing. That, I think, was my most enjoyable thing, to actually get to be more involved with the students.
We have another grant that is a community-based grant, and with that grant, we've established 5 regional service learning centers. So in your area, each of those regional centers are responsible for about 10 counties. Ray is the regional service learning director in Tulsa YMCA. We have a regional center in Ardmore with the Kansas schools, and one in Oklahoma City with Campfire. We have one in Hobart with Great Plains Youth and Family Services.
Here,
4-H Club. 4-H Club is in Wilmington. And Ada. and we're thinking 4-H Club might be a really neat way to spread service learning into that staff. I mean, they've got people out there doing it. Yeah.
On the education front, has anybody done anything with oral history and documenting oral histories? I mean, I know we hear about Vietnam and, you know, I guess it's Korea and World War II,
right,
veterans that are, you know, passing away faster than,
right,
the death rate during the wars,
right,
and stuff like that. Or
Andrea has a project that you've done some research on with
veterans.
Does that connect to service learning, or can that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, certainly, yes. It's a very neat thing. Students can go out and they can interview people, yeah, and then write it up. They can video it. They can tape it. They can just write it up. And then you can send it to the Library of Congress, and it will be published there for that anyone can go and see. And it's a national project that I can't remember exactly the name of, veterans.
It's neat to see what's going on in your area already, and then linking these kids up to that. So
yeah.
There's many other calls. There's a big effort going on, and Beth has been very involved in that. She's a first learning sub-grantee, so she's getting some of her kids involved. You know, because you're working with adults too, and especially those connections to senior citizens.
Absolutely.
I think that's so important.
Oh, yeah.
I came from Texas, but it's very similar with aging populations, rural areas, difficult to get bonds passed. And so from a real practical level, to
right,
get the community seeing the value,
right,
and the kids seeing the value of the adult,
yeah,
in their community too. I mean, that's a very rich...
Purcell, Oklahoma, has done a good job with that also. And it's more than just singing Christmas carols at the nursing home. How do you involve kids all year round? They partnered with senior adults, worked with them all year, talked with them, recorded their history, came back to their English classes, and used that as a content thing. They ended up doing a senior prom at the same time that the school prom was going on. They did a prom for the senior citizens, so the senior adults taught the kids dances that they knew. Kids taught the senior adult dances. They hired a big band. They went all out for it. So there are lots of things that could happen with senior citizens. Holdenville did a really neat project where they interviewed senior citizens and made a kiosk about the community and the history of the community. We have another project that had a cemetery that was all needed work on. Some of the graves were not marked, so they did research and took that on as a project. So there are any number of things that could happen. We try to do as much as we can to extend service learning. We just have received a grant from the International Lions Foundation for $100,000 to do Lions Quest training. I don't know if you're familiar with Lions Quest. It was around about 20 years ago during OBE when outcome-based education got a real bad rap because it dealt with character education and those kind of issues. We have done training the last two summers on Lions Quest and have had really good response from teachers. And we'll be doing that this fall. The dates and locations are on there. We can take about 35 participants in each of those workshops. So if you're interested, the application is attached that you would just apply for. We like to have a cadre of people from the community rather than just an individual. So we're looking at maybe a couple of teachers, maybe an administrator, maybe a community person. We're partnering with the Lions Clubs all over Oklahoma. And what they bring to the table is financial support after the training. The training is very expensive. The grant will provide the training. Then what we're asking the Lions Clubs to do is provide the materials, the student materials. So if you're interested in that, yeah.
From an assessment standpoint, do you all have any data as far as students in terms of impact on dropout rates, or not just test scores, but retention? And you mentioned alternative settings. I mean, are you getting some data like that as far as how this is engaging kids and keeping them in school?
As of right now, we don't have any long-term data on that because we haven't been evaluating long enough. But there is, that's what does show, that being involved in these types of activities does keep kids involved in school and promotes them to want to be better in school and gives them, a sense of pride in their work. I've also seen, I evaluate the 21st Century Grant throughout the state, and they're trying to include service learning within what they're doing. So it's even being included in these schools, and a couple
right.
of them actually do have the Learn to Serve America grant as well as their 21st Century. But I'm seeing even the ones that didn't have applied for the Learn to Serve, that they're trying to get that service learning component going.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think it's going to be great. I mean, it's a great program. It's one of my
national staff.
Yeah, the national stuff will show, but we don't have any long-term stuff yet.
But the stories that you're capturing are probably more persuasive than even statistics as far as sharing with people why they need to do this in their community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have to have an active blind club in the community to do this.
No. In fact, we're doing quite a bit of, depending on who applies, then the Alliance organization looks in that area and says, where are the Lions Clubs? We also have some extra funding in the grant itself to help.
So the training's free, and there's that connection already to a civic organization, and
that they really want to be involved. And then also the So the goal is to have several people trained and get back to the job. And then rewritten lately, and it's quite good. And there's a certain component of that.
It's very active learning, and I think your participants will benefit from participating in the workshops and the training.
Well, this might be a good start for the line to get started.
Yeah.
I know my little hometown, when my husband, when they were younger, when he was a librarian, they had a real active line club. And then as the old ones that got it started,
right,
passed away, it just sort of went,
yeah. I think that's the story all over Oklahoma.
But we've got some younger people coming up in the curtain now that might be really
important. Right. And then in many communities, Elk City's a really good example. They have LEO clubs, which is the youth organization of Lions Club. So there are lots of competitive speaking and lots of activities that those kids are involved in.
We do have some additional material that I believe that's
going
to
be
good at home. So if you
didn't
get one.
Oh, did we not have enough?
Sorry. Where's everybody from? I'm just curious. No, your name and where you're from.
I'm Lisa from Oklahoma City, and I work with an organization called Parents as Partners in Education. So I'm a parent education specialist.
I'm Lisa Coleman, and I work on Harmon School in my law, and I'm a pre-K teacher.
I'm Wes Fryer from Oklahoma City. I'm the K-20 education advocate for AT&T for the state.
I'm sure Gavin learns about Disney schools on the 7th through
12th. I'm Horace Bell from McCartan High School in Haskell County, not McCartan County. And I'm the technology director, the vocational teacher, deal with most of the grants, and sort of all our flock.
You do anything.
I'm not trying to do it all now and teach six classes. I'm down to three classes, so I can work out.
I'm Coach Adam from Marlowe, high school counselor in the district test board.
Great. The Lions Quest has been very appealing for counselors in that they deal with many of the issues.
We got a lot of Lions Quest in the state of Iowa, and you sent in a couple of about
right.
Six names to serve on the committee.
Yes.
But they never met, so I don't know what the problem was. But we got a couple of calls that she was working on getting it together.
Right. Good. Good to have all of you here. What questions do you have? I mean, we have tons of stuff we could show you. Lots of examples. We have art examples. We have environmental examples of programs that are going on. If you'll come by the booth, we'll give you CD-ROMs that have most of the examples on it. Yeah, the curriculum has only one copy. We're getting ready to publish that because I think it's such a neat document that kids have done.
We did.
Well, the best thing about it is I need something to take back to my administration.
Sure. And we're happy to do
something like that. I can take back and say, okay, here's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because they have an open ear, but at the same time,
right.
I don't have time to go through and develop all of these forms. And if I had them,
true.
Before I could just pull them out and say,
true.
Okay.
And we're happy to come and speak to your teachers or at a staff meeting or whatever. The regional center folks, the regional centers we've done quite a bit of training with them. They in turn, like if you're starting a youth action council, they've had a challenge master training, which is low ropes, leadership, getting kids together, and they're happy to go out and do that kind of training with young people. So
provide your best practices, modules and websites and curriculum and grant opportunities and
right.
all kinds of things. It's just help you get started and be there at least.
Right. Andrea just did a leadership the fellows program. You want to talk a little bit about that?
This is our second time to do this. It's a little bit different, but we think that to get good quality service learning going in this state, that we need to train someone up front before they go and try to implement a program. So what we did is we had the first half of a training session with 10 teachers that are going to become service learning fellows. They'll have the second half of their training this month, and then they will be able to write a grant and be well prepared to write a grant and, you know, start a new service learning program. So we hope that that will probably happen again in 2 years. But that's kind of what we're thinking.
You've gone over a lot of sort of best practices and tips for success, and getting the kids involved and the community involved sounds like a big piece, but can you talk a little more about the teachers? Because teachers have taught, you know, the same way for a long time, and you're talking about doing something very radically different as far as the instructional environment.
Yeah.
So what's been the most successful ways schools have gotten the teachers on board? Because that seems to me to probably be one of the most important pieces.
And we did quite a bit of in-service training once people are on board. We bring all of our sub-grants together for network meetings in which they learn from each other. And that is true. I naively believed that this would be really easy for people, that it's service and it's linking to academic learning. What we find is a very complex process. You're dealing with lots of different pieces. Dealing with getting outside the box, and those folks that think that way or think more globally gravitate to this type of program. The person who wants to pigeonhole information, this program drives them crazy.
Materials available to help frame that. Sometimes people need a give me something in my hand and I need
like a
project citizen, like a curriculum. Like step one, do this, step two, and then from there, once they get a methodology done that works for them, because you know, this service learning all the time, people are the aspect of what they're doing in the classroom, or as a civic organization like the YMCA, we engage in these resources. So it's a key to that.
It's a way of doing it. It's a methodology.
They figure out where it fits in, but sometimes people need that hand on. There's a lot of, published curriculum that help. Step one, step two, step three. Here's a letter to your editor. That type of thing that helps the project go through as well, because it's actually a civic piece.
You can get real. Get me better. Are you going to be in the boat? I've got a special meeting that's putting in. You got the wrote up for me.
Yeah.
My husband's principal, and she's one of the
teachers on the mat. Mention is that I think you get one teacher in the school that's excited about it, and they start pulling in the other subject teachers to help with part of the learning aspect, and they don't really know that they're doing something different. You're just pulling them in, and then they get to see the difference that it makes in students and the way they respond. And it's another way, I think, to get that the teachers involved. But that's something that we face all the time.
And then we get people that we feel like are at a fairly high level of operation, and they change schools or move on to something else.
But you're really looking for a pioneer to be a catalyst in that school
right.
to then invite
right.
others.
And I think the regional centers have helped a whole lot in that they can go out and do some hand-holding. They can offer training. We've tried to use the video conferencing as well. We'll be having, I think on your application information there, it talks about a video conference that would help you to complete the grant. So,
but we. I think that would help an awful lot because I was trying to do everything in one person. Do it all, and I've been training in it other than our just meetings.
Right.
That we need to. I think that would be
We've started asking at many of our meetings for them to bring youth or youth representatives. So while the teachers and adults are meeting, the young people are also doing some kind of service project. And having grown up in a really small community in Western Oklahoma, I'm interested in how do you get kids to think differently? How do you get them to experience more diverse populations? How do you get them to experience more diverse ways of thinking? So, we just finished this summer a leadership camp for middle school youth. Brought them to Camp Takatoka in Tulsa for 2 or 3 days, and brought in a consultant to work with young people. And I think those kind of experiences are really good for kids. Or it's what I missed from my own education. Have we told you more than you wanted to know?
Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced and syndicated for a global audience by Wesley Fryer and are shared under a Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.